Win Today Hockey O'Clock.
In diesem Augenblick wird's jetzt richtig hitzig. Yeah. Und die Scheibe kollert über die Linie.
Mittendrin statt nur dabei.
Das ist unglaublich, was die vier zelebrieren.
Nice move, another nice move.
It's part two of a little mini-series here on Win Today Hockey O'Clock. Last week, we've already discussed some of the contenders and talked about the most important, maybe storylines and buttons to push heading into the home stretch of the regular season. Now it's a little more desperation time. We'll talk about some of the teams of the current bottom seven, of the Win Today Ice Hockey League, but we'll also talk about teams in regards of how to maybe change their trajectory and become dark horses along the way of a long playoff run. I'm incredibly happy that he does this a second week or for a second week in a row. Winningest coach in league history, championship winning head coach, brightest hockey mind as I labeled you on last episode, Coach Rob Daum. Thankful that you're doing this again with me.
Well, like I said, it's great. I always love to talk hockey, and I especially like to talk hockey with you, Martin, because I've told you this a number of times that I think you do a wonderful job in this setting. I think you're a great interviewer because you analyze what the person is saying to you, and you know what the next question should be based on what the person said, and that's not an easy thing to do. And trust me, I've talked to a lot of people that just stick to a script, and no matter what I say, they could care less. But you're very very gifted at that, and it makes it enjoyable just to sit here. We're just sitting here having a conversation, and you're able to elicit whatever bits you want to get out of it. It's a great skill to have.
Very flattered. Thank you very much for the kind words. And if we get down to the nitty-gritty, how great is this? Having a conversation about the great game and dissecting it. And that's what I'm looking forward to doing with you. Again, this episode can be seen online as well. If you're listening to this on your regular podcast feed, please switch to the show notes of the podcast. There you'll find a YouTube link, and this will guide you to a video of us talking, and it will be worthwhile because we're looking at clips, so that enables you to see what we're going to talk about too. And just as a matter of fact, this episode will have been recorded a little farther away from the time of its kind of appearance online. This will be on the Wednesday after, or this will be out on a Wednesday after the international break. So when it starts to get really interesting for a couple of teams, especially in the bottom seven, not only about trying to make the top six, also about seeding as regards the pre-playoffs and of course making the pre-playoffs first of all. These are some of the things that we're gonna talk about, and just bear in mind some of the things that we talk about might still change. There might be injuries, there might be new coaches, new players brought in, whatever. If this indeed happens, please bear in mind this was recorded a little earlier. Coach, you still remember how we kicked off the first episode?
I do.
How about we do it again? I wanted to have like an anchor point, and I think it's really interesting how often, how fondly Chris Knobloch, the head coach of the Edmonton Oilers, talks about you. And we've heard him talk about you and the influence that you had on him right after his appointment. Found another snippet that happened in late November or in November of 2024. So basically a full year later, the Rob Daum impression appears to be a lasting one. Let's just listen in to Chris Knobloch getting interviewed, I think, right before a game.
Chris, a year ago, you referenced Rob Daum as one of your coaching mentors. He's here. What were some of the keys you got during your time playing for Rob when you think back at the University of Alberta, or maybe transferable to the various different levels you've coached at as you've been on your journey?
I think there's a lot of lessons I learned, and one, I think, one, treating everyone with respect, you know, the players, and, you know, being able to coach them up and not having to demean them to get the most out of them. I think I treated everyone with that respect. One, being organized, whether that was prepared for the opposition for a game or the practice. He was very professional. Always, we knew he was prepared. So it ultimately carried over to all the players, knowing that they have a job to perform too. And then just, you know, detail oriented, just knowing exactly, you know, what was important, and getting that message across to the players and letting them play their game. So, you know, that's just a handful of them, but I think I learned a lot. And, you know, as you get older, you know, when I was junior, you don't understand what a coach's role is as much. As you get older and you're in university and you're trying to, I guess, see, you know, you're maturing, you're understanding everyone's role, whether that's within a hockey team or in a classroom, whatever it is. But, you know, I obviously had much brighter eyes and was paying more attention. And, you know, I had a lot of respect for Rob and understood what he was doing for our team.
I mean, as mentioned, if he brings you up time and time again, there have to be lasting memories, things that you instilled. How often do you communicate or exchange messages?
With Chris? I talk to him usually once a month normally, you know, exchange messages, whatever the case may be. I really admire what he's done with the team there. I spent a lot of time in Edmonton. I went to school there, lived there. It's a hockey crazy environment, and he's done a tremendous job of reigniting the enthusiasm for the team with the work he's done. I mentioned it last year when he took over, how you can't deny the impact he had at that time, and it's carried over. And this is a tougher situation for him. Last year he went in with house money. You know, the team was struggling, and he took over and did the things that he did.
The only way was up.
Yeah, and now he's coming in with the expectations of a team being at the level that they're at, and that's always more difficult. And he's done another tremendous job this season, and you know, I'm hoping for him that they're able to close the deal, because there's no greater achievement in sport than winning a championship, and it doesn't matter at what level. I mean, the NHL and a Stanley Cup is the ultimate, but the feeling is the same when we won the championship in Linz, or when I won national championships at the University of Alberta. The feeling of being a champion is the same whether it's your novice champ, well, not novice because they're not old enough to understand, but when you're mature enough to understand what it takes to win, no matter what level you win at. The feeling is the same, and it's a terrific achievement. I hope he gets a chance to experience that at the NHL level.
Granted, every coach has to at one point come up or create his or her own style. Mm-hmm. And there are so many different influences. But is there something that you see in Chris Knobloch in the way the Oilers play under his guidance that kind of reminds you of maybe an earlier version of you?
Well, first, yeah, they play a very similar style as to what we played at the university, and you know, it's well, clear. Chris mentions it that he picked up a lot of the things that he uses now back then, and you can see it with the way the team plays, the way they break the puck out of their own zone. They use the middle of the ice freely, where a lot of teams try and work the puck up the boards. They're a little bit more creative on their breakouts. They forecheck aggressively and all of these things, and that's the way we played at the U of A. Other teams do that in the NHL as well, but I know that Chris has mentioned that he does that. In the clip you showed, the thing that touches me the most, I mean, I'm glad to be a detail-oriented and professional and all of those things. But the key thing for me is he said that I respected the players. And that, for me, is a great compliment. because I love the play. I love the people that play for me. They may not know that, but I do. But I don't fall in love with them either. And I think that's one of the things that, as a coach, you have to love your players, but you can't fall in love with them. And I respect the players. I respect what they have to do. And I'm glad that I was flattered that he would mention that, because I think that's from a coaching perspective, and for myself, I think that's a very high compliment.
Now, to turn the page a little and move our attention to current happenings or not so current happenings in Winter Day Ice Hockey League. Last episode, we talked about some of the teams in the top six and what kind of constitutes success and how you might be able to achieve sustained success. Now we turn our attention to the teams in the bottom seven, teams whose season might not have gone according to plan, teams who might have had longer losing streaks or stretches. Last episode, you mentioned it's so important to set the foundation on day one of training camp and throughout training camp and throughout the season. But if things haven't gotten according or haven't gone according to plan, that's the correct phrasing. And you've been in that shoes or in those shoes before. You had to take over a team whose season hadn't been going well. What buttons would you be pushing at this time of the year? How would you try to create the sense of urgency?
Well, I think any time there's a coaching change, there's a sense of urgency. I think the players recognize that this is a dramatic step. So right away you have their attention. I've done it four different times. I've gone into teams during a season. So immediately you've got their attention. So you don't have to worry about that. And that's the most important thing, is to have their attention. So you've got that right off the bat. And for me, it's a matter of analyzing the situation, determining how the team plays, what they're good at, what they need to work on, and then putting your structure in to help cure those problems, but not doing too much too soon, chipping away at the problems, a little bit here, a little bit there, a different voice, a different look, and then working, putting in a fundamental structure, and then working on that to turn the tide and get moving in the opposite direction, because usually you're coming in with a team that's, in most cases, they've been on a losing skid, or it's just a situation where they can't handle a coach any longer. That doesn't happen as often, but it's usually a losing streak that does that. But I've seen where the team just can't, the coach has just run out of time from a personality standpoint. So it's getting back to fundamentals and making some dramatic changes, but you can't change things overnight, and you can't change all the things you want to change. So you change what you can as quickly as you can and then work on it.
But the interesting thing this season has brought upon us, and we've had years, and maybe that's still COVID-related, budget cuts-related, we haven't seen as many coaching changes as we were used to see in years past. At the time of this recording, we've only had two coaches released or fired. This might change. And one never knows with Pustatal, who's never had a coach from start to finish in their time in the Winter Day Ice Hockey League. And others might ponder a coaching change. Not that I know of one, but just might happen. But as of this recording, only two. And it had suggested a lot more coaches who maybe might have been let go in years past will finish the season. If you're in a situation that's relatable or similar to that, is there a way for you to mix, like just grab it in your own bag of experience? Was there a way of mixing things up mid-season, pushing different buttons, setting or having new, for the lack of a better word, impulses?
Yeah, I think as a coach, you have to do that. You have to have that in your bag. And there's all sorts of different ways to change the momentum of a season. You know, and the biggest thing for me is to be positive. You always want to try and stay positive. And my my philosophy is the worse things are going, the more positive you try and stay. And when things are rolling well, you can be a little bit more nitpicky. You don't want to let things just go. So if you see something that's not quite right, you can jump on it right away and just get the attention of the team. You can, there's all, you change your lineup maybe a little bit. You don't change your style of game necessarily, but you find, maybe you give a couple days off. It's just to try and change the rhythm and the momentum to try and turn things around a little bit. But the biggest thing is, if you believe in what you're doing, then you just have to find ways to, you do the same things, but you do them differently in order to change the mindset of the players a little bit. And maybe there comes a time where you really have to kick them in the ass. That's always a bag of something you have in your back pocket if you want. But I'm not a believer in that. I'm not a believer in humiliating players or embarrassing players. I think you, no matter what the circumstances are, you should always respect the players and find a way to motivate them while still not being disrespectful. And I mean that at any length. I don't think you should ever disrespect your players or humiliate them or embarrass them or anything like that.
And that's one key point to make, because once we started watching clips on this episode of Win Today Hockey O'Clock, we wanted to show positive highlights. We wanted to reinforce what a team's been doing well, maybe if only at times. And we don't want to pick on players. Certain mistakes might just happen once or twice, that someone's not in the right position to make a play. It's a game of mistakes, and because of mistakes, goals are happening. So that's the thing I just want to hammer home right here before we get to the two teams that we'll look at. Pushing the right buttons, developing a sense of urgency, trying to mix things up, and getting hot at the right time. We've seen Bolzano a couple of years ago. I've mentioned it during episode number one, but they started turning it around in December and then went on that long playoff run that eventually got them to game seven in the finals and the title in April. What's enough time as we're sitting right here at the home stretch with only a handful of games to go for all the teams? What's the minimum amount of time you need as a coach, or you would have needed in certain situations, to try turning things around?
Well, I think the minimum amount of time is when the season ends. That's the minimum, because it's a new season, and so you come in, if you're in the playoffs, anything can happen, and so you've got, that is the minimum amount of time. The most time, you'd have to have as much time as you can, because then you have a greater influence. I remember one time I went into, my first time I went into FELAC was during the middle round.
Right.
And I mean,
Fireman Rob.
Yeah. And I mean, how much time is that? That's less than minimum. But we managed to make the playoffs and qualify, and then played a what I thought was a great series and went out. The playoffs is the minimum. The second minimum is the international break in Austria. The second international break in February is a great time to make a coaching change if you want to make one, because it gives you a week of practice. So you get to implement a lot of the things that you might want to without the stress of having games in between. So you can put things in place. Then you can take it into the games. You've got four games maybe before, depending where you are. In most cases, you're going to probably play 7 to 10. So you've got a week, you've got four games to be into that structure, and then you can see what happens. And anybody can win a 2-3 series. You and I and a good goalie could win a 2-3 series. So, you know, you've always...
Don't underestimate my incompetence. I probably couldn't.
Well, so, you know, that's... So then you win, and you're in, and you've just won a series. Now, all of a sudden, you've got confidence. You're going into a team that's been sitting waiting. And it's really great if they have to pick you, you know, if they decide they want to pick you, a little additional motivation. So if you, but the bottom line is you have to have a good enough team. If your team isn't good enough, you're not going to pull a rabbit out of the hat. It's usually teams that underachieve through the regular season, and then they hit the playoffs and they decide it's a new season. If you're not good enough, it doesn't matter. You're not going to, I mean, you're not going to win a championship if you're not good enough. But if you've underachieved all year, you've got the talent and you've got the people available to you, then you can make things happen when the playoffs start.
And even if it might not seem that way, there is a lot of talent. There are a lot of talented players on teams that are making up the current bottom seven. And we are about to find out if teams have done their homework, maybe with some reinforcements on their way as they start their last handful of games today. The first team we're going to tackle, and again, we polled the good people over at the Hockey Forum, is, of course, one of your former teams, and one of the teams a lot of people are interested in because it's in a hockey-crazy town. It's, of course, the IDM Wärmepumpen VSV. And again, we'll dissect their power play. You brought along a couple of great clips just to illustrate what they've been doing well. And before we take a look at the very first one, the season Villach's been having an interesting one. As always, when things are not going too well in Villach, rumors start spreading. Well, is this the week the coach faces his kind of final test? Then they turned it around. They went on a hot streak. Then again, a series of games where they didn't play up to their potential. Of course, injuries played a role. Now they have three goaltenders that they're paying good money to. So they already used the reinforcements card as well. It's been a tumultuous season from the outset looking in. How have you followed your former team?
Well, I've followed them closely. I think there's a couple of things that you touched on in when you talk about their team. If you look at statistics, they're a high wire act. They're third in the league as we're speaking here in goals for. Their power play
is really good.
Is really good, and we'll talk a little bit more about that. And I'll mention some things as to why they have the most productive line in the league with Hughes, Hancock, and Rebernig, and they're so offensively, they're a very, very good team.
But there's a but.
But their penalty killing is 11th. That's not good enough. Their ability to defend and their goals against is 9th. That's not good enough. If you compare that to the other teams we talked about last week, they're all in the top five in those areas. Power play, penalty killing, goals for, goals against, they're all in the top five. Villach offensively is in the top in those areas, but they're not defensively. And so because of that, they play a high risk game. They don't defend. They're always thinking offense, even when they're defending. And so there's holes in their defending in all areas of the ice. And the opponents get lots of odd man rushes. They get all sorts of, in the defensive zone, they create opportunities. So their defending is the thing that really, puts them in the position that they're in.
Let's just assume Philip punches their way to the top six or ends up, as it might seem right now, in the pre-playoffs. Anyhow, they get to a postseason round and you label them a high wire act. And usually in postseasons, teams really start to clamp down on the offensive playmakers. You just know that there is less space, less time. How should a Villach plan B look like?
Well, I mean, hopefully heading into the playoffs, they're defending at a higher level. They have to defend at a higher level. Otherwise, it's really, really difficult to outscore good defensive teams night after night after night in order to win a playoff series. It's difficult. So they have to be able to win the 2-1, 3-2 games. We talked about it last week about there being fewer power play opportunities, so that makes it even more difficult when you rely on your power play to provide offense. So, they if their defending isn't at a higher level heading into the playoffs, it makes it tough for them, because you're playing the same team every night during the regular season. You get your games that are maybe, you get your six or seven a little bit easier. Well, you rarely get six or seven, but you get your four or five a little bit easier. That doesn't happen in the playoffs, and other teams are going to key on the people that run the ship. Other people are going to have to step up. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays itself out. But if they can, and they're capable, you know, they don't do it often enough, but they're capable of defending it at a higher level, and they're going to have to do that consistently if they want to win in the playoffs.
I promise we'll get to the first clip in a bit, but the one question I was just asking myself, because last time around we marveled at the excellence of play of the league's all-time leading goal scorer, Brian Lebler, and in Villach, another one is still doing it year after year after year, John Hughes.
Well, I mean, he's been unbelievable. I think it may be the best he's ever played. And that's saying something, because I remember when he was playing with Derek Ryan years ago and they were
100-point players.
But John is you know, John, he's been a magician. He's a magician with the puck. He's the go-to guy with as far as their offense is concerned. He makes the power play go. He's just had a tremendous year. You alluded to it earlier about, you know, things being a little bit tougher and those type of players in the playoffs, and that's going to be the challenge for John is to maintain it come playoff time. But as far as how he's played up until now, he's been absolutely brilliant, and you know, and he loves to play. Nobody loves to play hockey more than John Hughes does. He loves to play, and you can see it with the way he plays, with the enthusiasm. And I mean, he's not a big physical player, but he's a competitive player. Like he wants to get the puck, and he wants to have it. And when he has it, he's the most dangerous player in the league right now.
And he's got some help being dangerous on the power play too. There is a certain Kevin Hancock that has joined the realms of players that create tremendous amounts of offense for Villach. And so it went accordingly on January 17th in a game against Salzburg, albeit again a losing effort, that they shined, of course, on the power play. And you brought along this clip to hammer home some points on why Villach's power play has been working so well. At the time of this recording, number three in the league, almost 25%, which is always what you're looking for. What happened right here?
Well, the things we talked about last week, as far as the power play is concerned, getting pucks to the middle, having traffic in front, looking for seam passes, getting pucks to the net, all of those things, and you can see it here. Now, Salzburg pushes down, and when you push down, you go back up, and you've got traffic in front. Pearson's in front in this situation. Reverding is often there. Loose puck. Goalie can't play it. Hancock slips in the back door and goes. The one thing with Villach's power play, which I think is makes it more difficult to defend than some of the other ones, is the presence of Hughes. He moves all over the place. Like you see it here, he's on his strong side. Often he's down low off the post. And when you make that play, you bring it up high, you draw them out, you move it to Hughes down low. Then he's got the person sliding back door, which he can pass to, or the guy that's net front pops out. If the guy net front pops out, defenseman goes with him, Hughes hits the guy back door. And
incredibly hard to defend.
Well, yeah, it's really hard to defend because there's so many options for him. If he has the time, if you give him the time, then he's going to make you pay. And he's been doing a really great job of that on the power play and 5-on-5.
Now, he was part of this play. He'll be part of the next clip. But before we show you that, I just want to talk about Maximilian Rebanek, who's enjoying a breakout year, and you had him under your tutelage as well, and maybe things didn't click as they are clicking now last year with other things happening. But did you see this coming?
Yes, I did. And I know that sounds...
Well, in hindsight, everybody's smarter.
Yeah, that's right. But I remember, when was it? Last year when we were discussing, I think it was in October sometime.
Before you were let go?
Yeah. We were discussing whether we should sign Rebernig or not. And my recommendation was that we do anything possible to sign Max because I felt he was going to be one of the top three forwards in his age group in our league as an Austrian player. He has a terrific release. He has a big body. He had learned to train the previous summer and had become a good pro. And so, I mean, am I surprised he has 20 goals? Maybe a little bit, but am I surprised he's been as successful? No, I'm not surprised at all. So it was a great signing, and I recommended he be signed quickly. Last year, before I was released to my duties, initially we had Luciani, Rokenvold, and Desjardins playing on a line together. And then Max, Andrew got hurt, Desjardins got hurt, and Max went into that spot and played well. And I brought, Andrew was coming off the injury, and I brought Max in and sat down with him and said, listen, when Andrew comes back, you're staying where you are. You've done a great job here.
But that's a classic next man up mentality. And if you get that top six opportunity.
Well, he played well there.
Got to take a bit of horns.
And he took advantage of it. And I wanted to give him the confidence in knowing that he was going to stay there and not have to worry about, because Andrew was coming back. And here's the thing. Here's one of the things with coaching. I said that to Max, and it was really good for him, but Andrew wasn't very happy because, he felt that was his spot, and he felt he was being demoted, when in reality, I mean, his role was going to be more important, but he didn't see that. He ended up having a good year and fighting his way through it. But when you make those type of decisions, there's the yin and the yang. I mean, it was a big yin for Max, but the yang wasn't so positive for Andrew. And that's the things you have to do as a coach. Those are the decisions you have to make. I felt it was important for Max, being the age that he was and being the type of player that he was, that he be given the chance to grow in that position. And so that's what I said to him, and then had to deal with the fallout after.
And Phil, reaping the crops, and boy, did he grow into that role. And it maybe shows as well on the next clip that you brought along. It's another power play goal from the same game, again, losing effort against Salzburg. But Rebernig takes it to the house. What happens here?
Well, initially, it's a good break-in. The team beats the first forechecker, which is what I believe you have to do on the power play. And now Salzburg is out of position off the rush. Rebernig finds a hole, and he really shoots the puck well. Like, he's got as good a release as anybody in the league.
This is at the Toivonen, beating him fair and square. Hundreds of dozens of forwards in this league know how difficult
this
is.
See, there it is right there, beating the first forechecker, a quick up with the goalie. First guy's gone. We don't come all the way back. They don't come all the way back and set up. They just move past the first guy.
The second Freudian slip, if you want to reconnect to the organization, we can make things happen here, Win today.
And now we get it. The team gets in deep. Good puck possession, and Rebernig finds on that good play to get it to him too. That's not a structured play. That's a play entering the zone with control and then making a hockey play, and that's a smart play there. And he finishes. There was a line change, and he stayed out, got the goal. And it's just scoring off the rush. This is kind of a goal off the rush, even though it turns into a setup.
But then again, it just shows the creativity or the improvisational skills to be able to hammer this one home. And of course, it helps to have players like John Hughes who know what to do in situations that may go out of structure. You had a spring, another clip along from a January 10th game, a game that Villa would like to forget because it was a losing effort against Linz, and those two teams are probably two out of three that will be vying for that sixth seed, and I think they have one game left against each other at the time of the recording. But what does this goal from Kevin Hancock say about the Villa power play?
Well, you can see Hughes is down low initially, and here we're in the middle again, and down to Hughes.
Inside the dots.
Seam pass, one-timer, and traffic in front. I mean, that's and a look off, guys down low, traffic in front. It's a perfectly executed play.
What we've been seeing for many years now in the National Hockey League, and what slowly but steadily creeps into the Winter Day Ice Hockey League too, is just using a one-timer. There's so many. How mad does it drive you as a head coach seeing people out there on the power play being in good spots, having good opportunities to hammer home a shot, to use a one-timer, and then starting to get neat with it? And
drives you crazy as a coach. I mean, the whole idea is to get, when you can make a seam pass, it gets the other team adjusting, and when you make a one-timer, they have no chance to readjust. But as soon as you patty cake and play catch with the puck with yourself, that gives the goalie the chance to adjust and the defender. So it drives you crazy as a coach. And, I mean, some guys can't one-time the puck. You give them a little bit of leeway. But if you've got a guy there for the one-time purpose and he passes up that opportunity, it's just not smart hockey.
It's definitely going to be interesting how Philip will fare in the postseason and or playoffs. It's going to be an interesting period for the organization, too, as they're transitioning to a sports director or general manager with club legend Herbert Hohenberger. So the next couple of months, definitely very interesting ones for Villach, as have been the past couple of months for the Vienna organization. This is where we'll talk about the Spusel Vienna Capitals. Coach, before we start watching this clip, it's just an interesting time to be a Vienna Capital fan because obviously the atmosphere, games are still great. They're still one of the top, they are the top draw in the league. So people come out and watch hockey, but the product on the ice hasn't necessarily corresponded with the numbers in attendance. And it's been such an interesting year. They have a new president. They have a new or almost entirely new board, new head coach. A lot of new faces. It's been transitional is probably the right word. What would you add from your end, from what you've seen?
Well, I mean, if you just look at the numbers without analyzing too deeply, Vienna just hasn't been good enough. There's no, I mean, the only thing, and I hate to be negative, but the only thing that I find positive with Vienna is they're, at the time that we're talking now, they have the sixth best road record in the league, which is pretty good. Nothing wrong with being sixth. I mean, there's Villach is eighth, and Klagenfurt and Linz are better, but there's nothing wrong with being sixth. But at home, they're 10th best record in the league. Their power play is 11th. Their penalty killing is 8th. Their goals against is 8th. Their goals for is 10th. They've got...
They are right where they're supposed to be according to the numbers.
Yeah, according to the numbers, exactly. So it's hard to be... they have two players when we're with double digit in goals or other teams we're talking about.
Which at
here,
this time of the year is not good.
Where we've had other teams with 5 or 6 or 7 or 8. So they're not good enough. I mean, they compete on a nightly basis. I mean, you have to give them that. They give themselves a chance to win because of their compete level. But when it gets right down to it, it's difficult for them to win games because they don't do anything well enough to make a difference. like they don't score enough. They can't score themselves to wins. They can't prevent to win. Their defense is everybody. Their goaltending started really well. Then Parks got hurt. They had a good start, and their goaltending's been average since then. Not awful, but average. And their goals against, like I say, is eighth. That's not good enough. And there's nothing. There's nothing there that is reason. For optimism at this point in time.
I know we started off by saying we don't want to get too negative, and we really don't want to do so, but we're talking about one of the bottom teams in the league that's used to higher aspirations. Not too long ago, Vienna was an organization that was always vying for the semis, that always had outside chances of playing for the championship there, and they're probably the first organization to admit themselves, we're not there yet, but they've built an infrastructure from an economic standpoint around the club that's really good. Like each and every week, I'm getting new emails as regards to what company is now sponsoring them. So they're doing a tremendous job off the ice. So hats off to all the people make this happen. Again, the on-ice product doesn't necessarily correspond with that yet. And I'd love to pick your brain on one thing that happened a couple of weeks ago. One of the sponsors of the club asked them or made them, whatever or however that went, to attend a construction site early morning. So they played a bad game, obviously didn't show enough effort, and he wanted to make the players feel or see how it feels to earn a hard-earned wage and paying not inexpensive hockey tickets with that wage. So just to make him see how real work looks and feels as someone, and you might defer, and it's perfectly all right if you do so, but I'd just love to get your opinion on if this was spot on, took it too far, was completely unnecessary. What's your take?
Well, I'm not there, so I don't know
We don't know the full story.
What the attitude was in the dressing room, and it's a way to get. Have they been better since?
Not really.
Were they not working? Did they has there been a 2 week level of? Anybody can have a bad game or a bad day. They can go out and not performed particularly well. Was that something that was extended? I don't know. Was it 3 or 4 games in a row where they didn't put in the effort, put in the work? So these are things that I would need to know before I would. That for me, that's a desperate last ditch measure. And
that was basically pulled mid-season.
Yeah. And for me, if you have to resort to that, you've got the wrong people in your dressing room. And
because that would have been my assumption. You're dealing with professionals. They're playing pro hockey. If they're not professional, there are probably other ways to deal with people that are not as professional as you'd like them to be.
Yeah. So that's just my thought on that. I remember when we were in the playoffs with Klagenfurt and Petri was coaching in Klagenfurt, and they had trouble winning at home. So he brought the guys in, put them on the bus, drove around the lake, and then brought them back home. So it felt like a road game. And
he once entered the locker room with a chainsaw. So yeah, there's that.
And I'm thinking, these are professional athletes, really? That's just me. And of course. Of course, they won the game, and then they won the game because they'd gone on the bus and driven around the lake.
Yeah,
and
it's funny how narratives can be started.
Like, please, 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 please. To me, that's disrespectful. And I'm not trying to be critical of Matikainen, because that's not my purpose. And I'm not trying to be critical of the people in Vienna. But I think that's disrespectful. I think there are. I'm sure everybody was excited about now we're getting tough. Now we're showing them who's boss. Now, I just don't. That's just not something I would pull out of my bag of tricks. I'd try other things long before I would resort to that. I know other people have done that in the past, and I'm not sure if you gain the respect of the. I mean, if players want to play, if they feel respected, and they're treated like professionals, and that's my feeling. That's how they want to be treated, and I think they deserve to be treated that way. And when that doesn't happen, I mean, like I say, it's shock treatment, but I'm not sure it's the best thing long term for, or even short term, as a matter of fact. I mean, they have to do it because they're told to do it, but does it change everything? I don't believe it does.
I guess we'll label that under the whatever works category. We've crunched some of the numbers, and as it seems right now, it will be Vienna's job to stave off the surging Pioneers and really claw onto this pre-playoff spot. And Vienna's power play, when it's been working, but not often enough. They're just sitting at a mediocre 15.3 power play rate. It's the bottom fourth of the league. But again, we try to reinforce positive things here, and we brought along a goal that happened in a game on December 12th against HC Pustertal. It was scored by Zane Franklin, one of the bright lights, or yeah, one of the beacons on the Vienna team. And this might be a blueprint for everything that happens after mid-February. What can it take away from this right here to get their special teams going?
Well, first of all, before we get into the clip, Vienna is going to make the top 10. They're going to make the top 10. And so, can they win a 2 out of 3 series against whoever they play? Absolutely, they can. So, despite the season they might have had or they might be having, they can still win a 2 out of 3. You saw it last year. You know, it can happen. It doesn't take much to win 2 out of 3. Mm. And so, they're very capable of doing that. So, and then, you know, then... you know, we have a different conversation. As far as the power play goes,
and we'll roll that clip.
Yeah, it's the same structure as the other power plays we've been talking about. It's just that they haven't scored a lot of power play goals. And if you look at the number of their offensive players, they don't have a lot of guys that are putting up numbers. So it's not a structural thing. It's just a circumstantial, you know, a personnel thing more so than structure. And you know, I think this is Franklin scoring here. He's had he's been a real solid performer for him. They've got three or four, five guys that have been solid, and they just haven't had enough of that.
Would it be too outrageous to just start thinking away that as Vienna, with not as much depth as proven scorers go, to just not have a second power play unit and play the first one as long as possible?
No, I don't think you can do that. I think that's part of the problem, is that their depth and offense is so limited that they don't have a second. And they lost Dominic Heinrich he's been hurt, which takes away a lot. But they've got a defenseman that's...
Donahue.
Yeah, and Roskov's done fine on the back end. So... you know, but they miss Heinrich. And when you take one guy out, you don't have the second unit. And the second unit is something that you need if you want to have a high percentage on your power play. If you look at Filak, their second unit has been really effective for them when they've gotten the opportunity. So I think that's a big part. And the same thing with Klagenfurt. They move guys in and out on the power play due to injuries and whatever else, and they've still been able to maintain a high power play rating. So you have to have that depth. So, I mean, they'll get the lion's share of power play, but to have only one unit is not feasible.
Okay, I'm just trying to come up with plans, but there are so many smart people inside the Vienna Capitals organization. We're just observers and not the ones you'd call for advice, I guess. One addition to the Vienna Capitals, and I talked to someone within the organization during summertime, he said he'll be vital for us, is Jeremy Grégoire. He was there before. Now he's back. He's making a difference 5-on-5. He's also making a difference on a power play. Why?
He's been a good he's a good offensive player. He's been a good player for him all year. And here's a situation again where we get a shot from the outside with traffic in front. Goalie can't handle it. Rebound. And he's there, willing to go to the tough area, and he's able to get on a loose puck. No, he's been a good player for him. No question. I mean,
And these would be the games that you'd point to when it's all about winning two out of three games against quote-unquote better teams, because they just that was a December 22nd game, and we'll jump to the next clip in a bit, but they just beat the, at that time, lead-leading Bolzano, which exactly. is no easy thing to do.
Exactly. So, I mean, they're... They can win a two out of three. And when you win a two out of three, and we talked about it, somebody has to pick you, probably. And there's a little bit more motivation. But you have to be a good enough team to take advantage of that next step. And that would be the question you'd have to ask. And I guess we'll maybe get the... We'll see. We'll see how they do.
You brought along two more clips that kind of illustrate what Vienna's doing on the power play. And one of them is... or it comes from the January 17th game against Innsbruck, and it comes at the hands of one of the scorers that they brought in. And would he have been there from the get-go, he probably would be a double-digit scorer by now too. He might be by the time this one this episode here comes out. Joel Cramarossa on the power play. Okay, what do you see here?
Can we take that back to the beginning?
Sure.
Okay, now right here we've got the setup. Now if you look at Innsbruck, this is a well-prepared power play for Vienna. Innsbruck kills in a diamond, which means the low post is open. Now here we've got our setup, which is what we talked about. You can see the guy sliding from the front of the net down to the corner if you let it roll. And you can see how Innsbruck is set up. There's the pass. And now, because the guy is up and they're in a diamond, the back door is wide open. And it's a great read here. And curtains and slow music for the Innsbruck penalty kill. It was perfectly executed by Vienna.
Well, it's been curtains and slow music for the Innsbruck season, unfortunately, as they've already started to see the players go elsewhere. And the goal by Joel Cramarossa was the goal that made it 6-0. There was another power play goal that made it 8-1, I think, in an 8-2 affair at the hands of Seamus Donoghue.
Yeah, it's really tough to find Vienna power play goals because they don't score very many. But again, same setup, traffic in front. Shot through, gets through, and goalie can't see it. It ends up in the net. But again, they take advantage. Against the diamond, it's a little more difficult to walk to the middle, so you let the puck do the work a little bit more on the outside, which they do here. In the last goal, you saw the guy come off the post and hit the back door. This one, they just get it up top, and we get the shot. And there's no guys all alone in front.
That'd be the analysis of a power play that has a lot of room to grow, as do the Vienna Capitals. And they've got a couple of interesting games still on the horizon, especially one that looms large after the end of the international break. I think it's February 15th, and it will be against the Pioneers in their house. And if the Pioneers still play catch-up by then, this might be what it comes all down to. How important or dangerous is it to circle certain games on the schedule and calendar? Is it indeed a game-by-game approach, or do you already try to instill in your players, hey, February 15th, this is where we need to bring our A-plus game?
Well, two things. First of all, it wasn't so long ago when there was a similar game to this, when Vorarlberg came into Vienna. It was a must-win game for Vienna. Well, it was a must-win game for Vorarlberg, and Vorarlberg wins 4-2. So that tells you something about Vienna wasn't able to win that big game.
Well, first of all, it told you back then who was the hotter team.
Yeah, well, and it just so Vienna wasn't able to take advantage of home ice against a real crucial game. They weren't able to take advantage of it. I think that's been sort of how their season has evolved through the course of the year. Now, do you circle games on the calendar when you get down to the, you take them one game at a time, because if you circle game A and you lose game B before you get there, then game A is different. So you have to take care of business till you get to the circled game. And there are games there that are more important when you're playing 48 games, not really, but when you're playing 4 or 5 left in a season and you see the standings and you're getting down to the short strokes of where everybody's going to end up. Sure, there's games that are more important. The Linz Vilak game, was coming up when we're talking about it now. I mean, Vilak has to win that game against Linz if they want to finish ahead of Linz. They have to. Otherwise, they're going to have to go 8-0, and Linz is going to have to go 2-5 or whatever down the stretch of 8 games remaining in that contest. So, yeah, there are games that are more important than others when you get down to this time of the season. And every playoff game is important, obviously.
I asked you about your opinion at the very end of last week's episode. I'm trying to pick your brain again for insightful opinions, and it regards the off season. And there's still a lot of hockey to be played in between now and the end of April. Granted, a lot of seasons will end up until then. But is there a team that's got a more important off season ahead of themselves whenever their season ends in Vienna?
Well, I think they have a huge off season for sure. They do. They have a big season. You mentioned when we started this conversation that they have a plan, and this is the first step in the plan. And you have to appreciate that from the outside. You have to give them the opportunity to execute their plan. But in order for people to stay patient, and it happens in every league all over the world,
you want to see growth.
You have to see some type of growth. And so, yeah, I would agree. It's important for Vienna that they have some growth for next season. In order to do that, you have to have a good off season, because you build your team, you get your wins. You build your team to get your wins in the summer, not during the season. You can't bring in people to put your finger in the dike. You'd rather not have the hole there to begin with, and you do that by recruiting and building a solid team in the summer.
Curious to find out how the top 10 will shake out, the top 6. We're about to find out, only a couple of weeks away, and then it's on to the best time of the year. Of course, the playoffs in the winter, Ice Hockey League. And Coach, please don't start a podcast. You're so good at this. you might take my job. But I hope to have you again here in the Winter Day studio or in some other places. This has been great. Really enjoyable. Learned tons of stuff. And hopefully viewers and listeners out there can put that to use as well. So thankful that you took such an extensive amount of time to talk hockey with me. Thank you.
I will talk hockey anytime. Thank you.
And I'll get back to you on that. Thank you so much.
Winter Day Hockey O'Clock.
Kurz durchatmen bei diesem Wahnsinn. Und das ging rasend schnell. Der Traum vom Finale ist erfüllt.
Mittendrin statt nur dabei.
Mit Fans, stimmungsvoll und hoffnungsfroh.
Nice move, another nice move. Oh, he scores!